We're open for business live.
This is Sheffield Live.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insight and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We're committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 28th of July, 2017. I'm Jamie Veitch. I'm your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. This programme was pre-recorded on Thursday, the 27th of July. The show is going out through FM radio and through our internet live stream. And it will also be available as a podcast later from the Sheffield Live website. Talking about podcasts, did you miss last week's programme? If so, don't panic. It's a fantastic interview with Alison Smith. She's a professional musician and she gives lessons in business. Not only if you're a musician, but if you're running any kind of small business, you'll find these really useful. Plus, we had Sam Christmas and Tom Sutton from the Sheffield Chamber on the programme last week too. You can find the podcast of last week's programme on the Sheffield Live website, sheffieldlive.org. Go to radio shows, look up Business Live, and you'll find it there. But what's on the programme today? Well, we have our regular update in terms of what's going on in HR and employment law. Jay Biani is on the programme. I caught up with her earlier this week and she ran through a few things, including the Taylor Review, gender pay gap, vaping at work, and an employee being sent to prison after deleting evidence. There's been another big announcement in employment law this week as well, and we'll go through that later on too. But before we do, what else has been going on in business and in social enterprise this week? Well, 50% of the UK's electricity could be supplied securely and profitably by as early as 2030, according to a new study published by Imperial College London this week. Their researchers have developed a plan to adapt and to operate the electricity grid so that it could overcome uncertainties in renewable energy supply and demand. And greater integration of renewable energy into the UK's electricity grid is going to be key to lowering the environmental impact of the power sector and key to meeting climate change targets as well. If we want to reach the UK's national target, which is an 80% cut in greenhouse gases by 2050, then we're going to have to generate at least 50% of the UK's power through wind and solar resources. At the moment, just 17.8% of the UK's electricity is provided by renewable sources on average. Now, this compares with an average of 28% across the EU. And the Imperial College London plan, published this week, says that the more variable nature of some forms of renewable energy can be balanced by using adequately flexible measures. The annual NatWest SE100 Social Business Awards have been launched and are open for entries. They celebrate the achievements and the success of social businesses. Businesses making positive change happen throughout the UK across several categories. You have to have a completed profile on a NatWest SE100 index to enter the awards. And the SE100 index is an index of social enterprises. Throughout the UK, organisations are ranked according not only to impact, but also to growth. And it gives a snapshot of the social economy landscape in the UK and enables social enterprises to measure their performance against their peers and to find like-minded organisations with which they can collaborate. You can find out more about signing up to the SE100 Index and entering the NatWest SE100 Social Business Awards at se100.net/awards. The UK's creative industries are in the middle of a growth boom, according to new figures from the Department for Digital, Culture, Media and Sport, the DCMS. Their figures show that the growth in the number of people who are working in the creative industries has continued to outperform growth in people working in every other sector in the workforce over the last 12 months. Now, there are now almost 2 million people employed in the creative industries. That includes sectors such as fashion and design, as well as TV and radio. And that's a jump of 5% on last year. So compared to the wider UK workforce, which grew by 1.2% over the last 12 months, creative industries are creating jobs at four times the rate of the rest of the country's employment market. And growth isn't just taking place in traditional creative hotspots like London. Yorkshire, Manchester, and other areas have all seen a particularly buoyant employment market for creatives. And in fact, here in Yorkshire and the Humber, this region performed particularly well, with the growth in its TV and film industry at 40%, outstripping every other region in the UK. You send emails to people. Have you got their permission to do so? The Information Commissioner's Office has fined Money Supermarket £80,000 for sending 7 million emails to former subscribers. These are people who had already opted out of receiving communications from Money Supermarket. So the ICO has made it really, really clear by imposing the fine that when people choose not to receive direct marketing anymore, no means no, and organisations must not continue to send any communications. It also makes it absolutely clear that sending another email asking people to reconsider is not a viable nor a legal tactic. The person has opted out of all communications. And the Taylor Review of Modern Working Practices was published earlier this month. The long-awaited Taylor Review looks at the future of work and considered things like self-employment and the status of workers. So what did it recommend? Well, earlier this week, on Wednesday, I caught up with employment law expert Jay Bayani of Bayani HR and Employment Law to ask Jay not only about the Taylor Review, but also about other things going on in employment law which will affect you if you're running a business or a social enterprise. We'll hear from Jay now. So hello again, Jay. Thanks very much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Jamie.
Good stuff. So it's been an exciting and an interesting time in the realms of employment law. A few high-profile things have been going on, and the Taylor Review has been published at last. So can you start with giving us an update about that?
Yeah, so we've been waiting for this for some time now. The Taylor Review of Modern Working Practices, colloquially known as the Good Work Report. And the idea behind this is to make sure that all work in the UK economy is fair and decent. And with the emergence of different ways of working, the gig economy workers and all the recent cases we've seen of the Pimlico plumbers and the yes. Uber cases and Deliveroo, the government wanted to really get a grip on what the difference is between the status of workers and employees and those that are self-employed.
Indeed, yeah. So, as you say, we've been waiting for it for a while. And what does Matthew Taylor recommend? What does the review suggest?
So there are a number of things that have been... some people have not received them very well, really, because they feel that the essence of it is that it's not gone far enough in protecting workers. But some of the things that have been highlighted are we need some clearer definitions for the different types of working relationships, so workers, employees and the self-employed. And one of the things that he suggested is that we rename workers, which is this sort of entity that nobody's too sure of it actually means, and call them dependent contractors.
Yeah.
So they're that sort of middle ground between an employee who has full employment rights and somebody who's self-employed who has no employment rights, and then the worker or the dependent contractor is that thing in the middle where there's a working relationship which isn't quite employee and isn't quite truly self-employed. So right. That's one of yeah. the things to clarify that. Some of the other key changes that he's recommended are to increase the national minimum wage rates for those people that aren't on guaranteed hours.
Yes.
So that even if somebody doesn't have the security of guaranteed hours, at least when they do get paid, they get a higher minimum rate. Right. And a lot of those people, of course, are on the national minimum or national yes. living wage rates. So that could be quite significant for employers to have to bear.
Yeah.
The other thing that's interesting is 0 hours workers. So of course we are still allowed to have 0 hours workers contracts.
Indeed. Yeah.
But that those people may be allowed to request a fixed hour contract after a period of 12 months of being engaged on a 0 hours contract.
Right. Okay.
Is one of the suggestions.
Yeah. So it's creating a right to allow people who've been on a 0 hours contract for 12 months or more to request fixed hours.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And it would be a right to request, not a right to actually get fixed hours.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, there's always a get out for employers. But it may be that if you've had somebody working on a 0 hours contract for that period of time, you know, you've built enough of a relationship with that individual to think, well, actually, it's right and proper to
yes.
put them on some, you know, proper footing of guaranteed hours.
Quite, yeah. Okay, so you would have built that knowledge and trust up.
Yes.
Yeah, indeed. Okay.
The other thing is on the issuing of contracts. So, as you'll know, within the first 2 months of an employee starting work with you, an employer has to provide what's called the Statement of Terms and Conditions, effectively yes. like an employment contract. And there's now a suggestion that should happen on day one, and not only to employees, but to other workers as well.
Right.
So that could be quite significant for employers who quite often don't get to grips with their contracts and paperwork.
No, they don't, do they?
No, not at all, until after the employees started, and sometimes not at all. So there would be a push for them to really be prepared before an employee even starts, so that they're ready to issue that on day one of employment.
Yes, quite. And this is pretty significant. Lots of businesses aren't ready when they take people on, and they don't get that paperwork done. They don't get things in place.
No, I mean, in our work, so we work with lots and lots of businesses, and we draft a lot of contracts and policies for them. And even those clients that are supported on a regular basis by us and they have those ready don't always implement them. And we, you know, we do crack the whip sometimes with our clients and say, come on, have you actually issued these contracts that we've drafted? So, you know, if those sorts of employers who are already geared up to have taken advice and got their contracts in order are a bit laid back about when to issue them, you know, you do fear for those that aren't getting their act together.
Quite, yes.
So I think, you know, employers, whatever size, really need to start preparing for this.
Great. Okay. So on that note, in terms of being prepared for this, what's next? The Taylor Review has made its recommendations, the Taylor Review into Modern Working Practices. It was published last week. It's made a number of proposals, as you talked about there, Jay. So what happens next?
Well, the proposals are just proposals at the
yeah.
moment, but I think it's a pretty strong indication of what's to come.
Mm.
So the sorts of things that employers can be doing is, first of all, doing a job of work to identify how they're engaging people.
Yeah.
So in the last 6 months or so, we've seen a massive upturn in clients asking us to clarify for them, are these people that we've had work delivering services for us for many years, are they actually self-employed? Because although we've always considered them to be self-employed, oh, we've been paying them holiday pay and all these tricky things, you know,
yes.
that then it becomes quite difficult to decipher. So that's what they need to do first of all, is decide who are employed within their workforce, who's employed, who's self-employed, and who is in this middle category. The next step is to make sure that they've got the right contract to issue to their existing workforce and to anybody new they take on. So if they've got that ready, they literally just need to change the personal details of the individual and they're good to go as soon as somebody starts with them. I think the other thing is they need to think about how methods of payment. So we come across, we had a client last week who said that they've always paid cash in hand, and that's what their workforce expect on a weekly basis. And they wanted some advice on whether they can change that. Well, they can, but they have to go through a bit of a process to do that.
Right.
And one of the recommendations of the Taylor Review is also that we'll be phasing out cash in hand payments and moving to some sort of electronic payment, whether that's by PayPal or some other means. So even for, you know, engaging a window cleaner that you might pay cash in hand, or various other jobs, you know, I think that really will be phased out as checks are being phased out.
Yes.
And have done for quite a while now.
Quite, yeah.
National insurance is a big one, so they need to be talking to their accountants. Businesses need to know what the national insurance position is on the people that they've got working with them. And make sure that they're protected because there have been changes with the IR35 rules.
Yeah.
And then one of the Taylor Review recommendations was also that, do you remember the last budget?
Yes.
When the Chancellor introduced increased national insurance for self-employed, but then did a massive U-turn?
But then did a U-turn, yes.
Well, I think that's going to come back.
Right.
The Taylor Review supports that way of thinking.
So plenty of changes ahead when Parliament return and look at implementing these recommendations over the next parliamentary period, presumably.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And lots to prepare for.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I think it's just getting your house in order.
Yeah.
Is the best way to protect your business.
Yes, quite. Yeah. And of course, as ever, people can turn to expert support. Should they need it, and we'll flag up how people can get in touch with you at the end of the interview, Jay. So that's a big one, isn't it? The Taylor Review and the proposals that have been published within that when that came out earlier this month. But there have been other areas that have been getting quite a lot of attention too. The gender pay gap and the BBC salaries. That's been interesting, isn't it?
Yes, well, with the gender pay gap rules, businesses with 250 or more employees have to issue gender pay gap statistics.
That's right, and those came into effect at the beginning of April.
Yeah. And so the BBC, like lots of other big employers, have had to publish these, and because they're so public, that it's all come to light that, in fact, the gender pay gap is pretty huge, and it's not just about gender though with the BBC. I think there are some massive gaps in what they're paying people. There's some commentary that, you know, there's a class bias here, although of course class is not a protected characteristic under discrimination law, whereas gender is. So they're going to have to look at how they address that, and I think that the headlines have been that there have been a number of high-profile female presenters who want to challenge and may look at litigation, sex discrimination, equal pay, that sort of legislation would help them. But interestingly, there was, I don't know if you heard about the casualty actor,
yes.
Tom Chambers, whose response to it, rather foolishly, was to say that men's salaries pay for their wives and children as a justification. Well, you know, let me tell you, I've been the breadwinner in my family for many, many years.
Indeed.
And lots of women are.
Yeah, well done, Tom. Dear me.
So the consequences of this outcry, I think, could be a twofold. So one is you can't just impose a pay cut on men, because that would be a breach of contract. But there may well be some voluntary pay cuts. And I think some of those male presenters have already said that they would look at a pay cut.
Right.
But of course, you're going to get lots that don't.
I'll also know.
No. And so they're going to have to, first of all, work on trying to get some sort of agreement.
Yeah.
And then the other consequence is whether women will sue the BBC for discrimination. And what the BBC or any other employer would have to look at is they break down the nature of the job that's being done. They look at whether there's a justification. So, for example, if a man is being paid more and they can justify that that's because the show is particularly popular, then that would be okay. They can justify that in law.
And this is going to be really difficult, isn't it? Because we're talking about things that are quite hard to measure.
Yeah.
And in some cases, it's about ratings, but in other cases, it's about the perceived value. You know, a news presenter whose programme gets pretty high audience figures, but not as high as an entertainment programme. And how do you make those value judgments? This is going to be really, really difficult. Really, it's a really interesting can of worms that's been opened here.
It is, yeah. And I think it is so subjective, you know, working in the media, that it is going to be very difficult. But really, in any job, you know, I dealt with an equal pay claim recently for a business that we work for, which deals with very technical scientific work.
Right.
And even getting to grips with the difference between the men and the women that were working, and the challenge was brought by a woman. Now, in that case, you know, it was clear, any common sense view was that you could justify the difference because there was a difference in qualifications, there was a difference in the contribution that the man in this case was making compared to the woman, the level of seniority. But even then, it was really quite hard to really pinpoint what the technical differences were. And she was very much pushing, well, I'm doing the same technical scientific job as the man sitting next to me, but I'm earning less.
Yes.
So I think in any sector, it's not an easy job to do that sort of job evaluation. But that's what's needed under the equal pay legislation. Is what would happen is somebody would have to do a job evaluation.
Yes, quite. And the BBC has been subject not just to the equal pay legislation, but to calls from politicians when they were renewing BBC charter status for talent to be named and published, because in terms of other employers who employ over 250 people, they're publishing sort of overall statistical figures showing gender pay gap. But the BBC, it's been required to publish names and specific salary bands. So
yes, which you wouldn't normally see. Yeah.
So some of the talent are quite angry about that, and some commentators at the BBC say it's unfair because it means that people know what it would take to poach their staff as well.
Yes.
So again, there's a real can of worms here with the BBC, but any employer of over 250 needs to be prepared for the actual Equal Pay Act in terms of pay and gender gap.
Yes.
Publishing those. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm very disappointed to say that the legal profession has probably got one of the bigger gaps, which, you know, if you're working in the legal profession, you could predict that there would be. And I think it's about a 33% gap, which is huge.
Yes.
And although there are, this year, for the first time ever, there are more women entering the profession, there are more women law graduates than ever before and more than men, it's getting to those higher levels of partnership that the figures are really still very disappointing. And certainly on salaries, there is a real deficit.
Right, so there's a huge amount of work to be done there.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Jay. That's been fascinating. There have been a couple of other interesting, noteworthy things that have come up in the area of employment law recently. You've brought along a couple with you. Do you want to...
If there's time, I'll just mention some things to look out for. So vaping in the workplace, it wasn't that long ago that we talked about, you know, smoking in the workplace, and we put in place smoking policies for clients. And then we brought in these vaping policies, which were fairly similar. But apparently a new report saying that vaping may now be possible at work because research has shown that it's not particularly damaging to other people. So that's one to look out for.
Okay, watch this space.
Yeah, and then there's some move towards making wealthy mothers giving up or cutting their statutory maternity pay to subsidise the poorest parents. As a woman who's had two children, I think the only thing I've ever received from the state was a little bit of statutory maternity pay.
So who's going to define wealthy? Will it be means tested? Will people look at outgoings?
I have no idea. And I think, you know, just it's like the child benefit. You know, that was the other thing that people got. And of course, if you're a higher taxpayer, it negates itself now because you have to pay the same amount of tax on it. Yeah. I think eventually that's going to be phased out. So, you know, it's difficult because if you've just had a baby, although you may have a well-paid job, you're not necessarily wealthy, because if you're choosing to go back to work, you're going to have to pay an awful lot in childcare, for example, and your outgoings will be huge. It doesn't necessarily make you wealthy just because you've got a bottom line salary that's fairly big before you had a child. So I don't know how they will define that, but I suspect that probably will be something that will come in the government's move to cut benefits from anybody that they possibly can.
Right. Okay, so again, watch this space, indeed. Yes. And there's been an interesting case recently also with regarding deleting emails as well, which I noticed.
So lots of employers, when somebody leaves their business, they need to protect their confidential information, and they have restrictive covenants and things in place. But employees regularly flout this. And in this particular case, it was quite interesting because an employee has actually been jailed for 6 weeks for flouting a High Court order to protect confidential information. And, one of the things that he did, I think he deleted or transferred 8,000 emails to his personal email account. And even though the company had taken him to court while they were waiting for a trial, and he was supposed to keep all this confidential, he didn't. He warned his new employer, I believe. And so the ultimate consequence of that was a jail sentence.
Yes. So this wasn't a sort of just... he pressed the delete button and was jailed. This had clearly escalated. There'd been a process.
But it does give, employers some teeth.
Yeah.
I think to feel that, well, it's not the end of the road. You know, we've spent all this money taking an employee to court to protect our... confidential information and protect our business, and then what can we do at the end of it? So I think it's not a bad thing, I think, to give some teeth to this sort of flagrant flouting of court orders.
Quite. Okay, great. So that's really interesting. That's been a fascinating update of what's been going on, Jay. Thank you. And as ever, people can get in touch with you, your website, Twitter account. Do you want to give those out?
Yeah, so Twitter is @BayarniHRLaw, and our website is BayarniLaw.co.uk. And on our website, we have a newsletter sign-up. So if people want to keep updated we put regular updates on employment law news and changes and things that are of interest for anybody employing anyone, or indeed people that are employed that are interested in the employment law field, then they can sign up to that free of charge.
Fantastic. Thank you very much indeed, Jay Bayarni.
Thank you. Thanks, Jamie.
This is Business Live on Sheffield Live with me, Jamie Veitch. Business Live, our weekly business and social enterprise programme. And that was an interview with Jay Bayarni, who was talking with me on Wednesday of this week, giving an update in what's going on in employment law. Now, subsequent to that interview with Jay, there's been some breaking news. Unison have won a landmark court victory overturning the government's decision to impose employment tribunal fees. Now, Jay herself has put out a statement describing this as an end to the regime, which saw many people being priced out of justice after the Supreme Court unanimously ruled that the government acted unlawfully and unconstitutionally when they introduced legal fees in 2013. So at the moment, employees who wish to bring an employment tribunal claim have to pay an initial fee to issue the claim and then a further hearing fee to bring their claim to a final conclusion. Before 2013, it was free for employees to bring a claim in the employment tribunal. The introduction of fees saw a 70% drop in claims such as unfair dismissal, discrimination and unlawful deduction of wages. Jay Bayarni put out a statement saying, "We work with hundreds of businesses who are responsible and who treat their employees fairly. When advising employees, we see countless examples of employees who are mistreated and denied justice. We consider that many employees have been priced out of justice." Jay has been an employment solicitor for over 25 years, and she believes that the last few years of this regime, since 2013, means that employees have been denied then access to justice. So what happens next? Again, Jay told me in an email after her interview with me on Wednesday, it's unlikely that the fees regime will be abolished entirely. It is likely that the government will now issue a consultation paper and propose lower level fees, and could even suggest introducing a fee for the employer to pay when the claim is lodged. She added that any proposed changes will not take place overnight, as the Employment Tribunal Services will need to rewrite the tribunal rules and reconsider the online claims processing systems. And she said, will employers now see an increase in Employment Tribunal claims? Well, there might be a rise in the number of claims brought, but she says that businesses, responsible businesses, who treat their employees fairly, should be well protected. And as ever, for more details, for more support, if you want to contact Jay, she gave an interview with me, which we played earlier on in the programme today, and that interview was recorded before this ruling came out. But you can take a look at bayanilaw.co.uk for more details. Time now to take a break for a track of music. This is Hey Now by London Grammar.
We're open for business live.
This is Sheffield Live.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insights and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We are committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. Have you got a view on what's going on in business or in social enterprise? Are you an employer? Are you an employee? Do you want to put yourself forward to be on this programme? Do you want to suggest something we should talk about? Or do you want to send us a comment about something we've been discussing on the show? Let us know what you think, how it's going to affect you. It's really easy to get in touch with the show. All you need to do is email me, jamie@sheffieldlive.org, or send a text to 07 904 272 200. You can find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter. You can find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. And whether you're starting, whether you're running a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an employer or an employee, we'd love to hear from you, so do get in touch. So earlier today, we've heard from Jay Bayani. She runs Bayani HR and Employment Law, and she gives us a regular monthly update on changes going on in employment law and how they'll affect you, your business or your social enterprise. And a few things going on this month. We've had the Taylor Review into working practices, and that will affect you if you have workers or people or work with people who are self-employed, or if you're a worker or self-employed yourself. So Jay's given a view on that. Also this week, there's been an announcement with regards to employment tribunals. So we've touched on that as well. If you've only just tuned in and you've missed that, then don't panic, because you can catch up with the podcast of today's programme, which will be on the Sheffield Live website later on today. Around about 11 o'clock, go to sheffieldlive.org. Look up radio shows, find Business Live, and you'll be able to access this programme there. So what else is going on? Well, Sheffield City Region is celebrating a 73% increase in foreign investment, according to new figures from the Department for International Trade. Figures show that foreign investment leapt by 73% in the financial year to the end of March, compared with the previous 12 months. That means it's been the most successful year for international investment in the region since the Sheffield City region was created. And the figures show that there were 46 investments by foreign businesses into the Sheffield City region, creating 2,308 new jobs and safeguarding another 217. Recent examples that have a high profile include McLaren, the supercar company, investing into production and research at the Advanced Manufacturing Park in Rotherham. Also, the Singapore-based company Metro Holdings has invested in the Akero building on the Sheffield Digital Campus. And the Northern Powerhouse Investment Fund has announced its first equity investment in the Sheffield City region area. The NPIF has invested £500,000 into a Sheffield company which is developing high-performance linear motor generator systems. The company is Libertine. They're targeting further growth into commercial markets and they want to launch a new HQ, headquarters building, using the money, the £500,000, from the Northern Powerhouse Investment Fund. And Libertine itself, which works with customers in the power and the transport industries to commercialise electrical power generator products, currently has 4 staff. It was founded by Sam Cockerell, and it expects to double its workforce in the year ahead. A few events for you coming up. Over August, our friends at the Business and IP Centre in Sheffield have a couple of webinars. On the 16th of August, they have a webinar, an introduction to patent searching online. Then the 24th of August, they have an introduction to lean startup online webinar. And then 29th of August, there's an introduction to copyright online, a webinar there. Then in September, they have some face-to-face sessions, including essential business research. Now, more details about all of those are on the Business and IP Centre Sheffield's Eventbrite page. Go to eventbrite.co.uk and look up Business and IP Centre Sheffield for more details. What else is coming up? Well, in September, 14th of September to be precise, it's the Chamber Means Business 2017 exhibition. That's on at the AESC or New York Stadium in Rotherham. And that's bringing businesses together. An opportunity, according to organisers, to promote your business, your products and your services. Free to attend. And you can find out more at chambermeansbusiness.co.uk. Organised by Barnsley and Rotherham Chamber of Commerce. It's the Made Festival coming up as well, of course. That's taking place in November, the 9th of November, at the Crucible in Sheffield. They say it will give meaningful, practical advice and inspiration from experts and peers for entrepreneurs. And it's a brand new experience to educate, inspire and motivate not only early stage entrepreneurs, but established business owners too. Details about that at the website madefestival.com. More details there. September, it's the Good Stories 2017 event. This one is in London. Now, I'm speaking at this one. Looks like a really interesting event, which is why I'm excited to go down. 6th of September 2017. And this is if you've got a good social enterprise story to tell, but you're not sure how to do it, then come along to Good Stories, the marketing and communications conference for social enterprises, social entrepreneurs. Details about that program and how to book are at goodstories.org.uk. So lots there. Now, if you're a social entrepreneur, then more details for you about the Social Enterprise Exchange program. If you go to Twitter, you don't have to be have a Twitter account to take a look at tweets. Go to SocEnt Exchange, so SocEnt Exchange, and you'll be able to see details of events being run by the Social Enterprise Exchange Programme. There's something coming up on Tuesday, the 8th of August at Voluntary Action Rotherham, a social enterprise exchange information session organised by the Social Enterprise Exchange Programme. Take a look at Sockend Exchange on Twitter for more details, or take a look at the website sockendx, just a letter X and then change.net for details about that. And what else? There's a weekly meetup for entrepreneurs, wantrepreneurs and nontrepreneurs, so they say. This is MISC Sheffield, every Wednesday, 4 o'clock in the centre of Sheffield. Details about that. Twitter as well will publicise what's going on. Just take a look at MISC Sheffield, M-I-S-C, Chef, for more details of that. So plenty going on there as well. And I've said this before, I'll say it again. If you've got something going on, if you've got an event that you're running, your organisation's running, aimed at businesses or social enterprises, and you'd like to share the details of that with listeners of this programme, then get in touch. And of course, if you're doing something you think's really interesting, really unusual, really innovative, and you think we should cover you, or you want to be a guest on the programme, or put someone else forward to be on the show, then you can get in touch as well. All you need to do is email jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Send a text to 07 904 272 200. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter, and you can find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. And whether you're starting or running a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an employer, whether you're an employee, we're always really keen to hear from you. So please do get in touch. That's about it for this week's show, which, as I mentioned, was pre-recorded yesterday, Thursday, the 27th of July, and has featured an interview with Jay Biani of Biani HR and Employment Law, giving you an update on what you need to know, changes that have been going on in employment law that will affect you if you're running a business or a social enterprise. So my thanks to Jay for taking the time to do the interview with me. Find out more at her website. My thanks to you for listening. And we'll be back on air next Friday from 9 through to 10. So tune in then. But don't go away now. We're going to play out with some music for you. So I hope you enjoy this. We've got a little bit of Alison Smith. She's a classical guitarist. We interviewed Alison in the programme last week. So if you missed that, catch the podcast. Two performances by Alison for you to enjoy now. The first track is Capriccio Arab by Tarega. That's from Alison's first album, Recuerdos, meaning Memories, which was released in 2008. And we'll follow that with a track from her new album released this year, Incandescent. And the track that we will play is Luf Carrar. So enjoy these. Thanks very much for listening.
We're open for business life.
This is Sheffield Live.